But a bright light appeared, intensified by frequent great flashes. At first, we thought that it might mean another German attempt at a breakthrough like that which occurred at the Battle of the Bulge in December. But then we concluded that an ammunition dump had probably been hit and was going off one part after another. It was like so many other episodes which we encountered, of which we saw neither the beginning nor the end. And we never knew exactly what had happened. Easter Sunday occurred while I was still at Aachen. And a couple of us went to church. The service was a Catholic Mass held in the ancient chapel, supposed to be the greatest surviving monument of Carolingian art, having been built about 800 A.D. The GIs came in by ones and twos, with their holding their steel helmets and their carbines. The helmets could be put under the chairs or hung on the back, and the carbines leaned against the back of the chairs. The service, conducted in Latin, went on and on, but was very impressive in that extraordinary atmosphere. In this chapel, Charlemagne and later emperors of the Holy Roman Empire had been crowned. Today, it was filled with soldiers, plus one or two civilians. Indeed, two civilians that I know of. Because of the reverence and the beauty of this chapel, it was a very impressive service. At the end, as I was filing, this is to make insertions of two insignificant items which have already been dictated but have been lost. When we finally found our way to Aachen, the sun had come out and it was a lovely early spring afternoon. We drove down
city streets frequently blocked by rubble, with ruined houses standing on both sides. In spite of the tremendous destruction, we came upon a pair of GIs pitching a baseball back and forth like any two boys on a college campus at home. The second insertion should come at the point where we were filing out of the Charlemagne Chapel in Aachen after Easter service. A Red Cross man in GI uniform stopped me and held out a knitted cap, saying that he had seen me drop it, that I could probably use it. I certainly could. I had had it in the helmet which I was carrying in one hand, and as soon as I was out of the church, I put the knitted cap back on and put the helmet on top of that. That knitted cap had stopped many an icy wind and would continue to do so in the weeks to come. This was the first and most important aid that I received from the Red Cross. The two subsequent cases involved donuts. When I was in a very hungry state and no other source of food was at hand, I deeply appreciate the assistance and always contribute to the Red Cross. As soon as possible, we drove from Aachen over to Cologne, which was a pretty badly damaged city. The great cathedral stood almost untouched, fronting its great square. As we drove near there, we stopped to have a brief look, but were not welcome as sightseers. The preceding sightseers had exposed themselves unduly to the sight, to the view of the German troops across the river. And they had opened up with mortar fire, which wounded one or two of the sentries on guard in the square, although the sightseers had gotten out of there in time. The magnificent cathedral was virtually undamaged, and but we proceeded rapidly on our way to the Physical Institute of the university, which was nearby. Alsace had already visited this, but had left a good many papers, which we removed. The Chemical Institute seemed to have very little to offer. Indeed, it left no impression on me. Near the Physics Institute was an art museum belonging to the university. It had been severely damaged to such an extent that the upper part of the structure had been destroyed and had fallen down into the lower part, facing what had been the main entrance was a grand staircase, at the top of which was an Egyptian mummy in its case. It had survived bombardment as well as many centuries. Getting to the museum and Physical Institute, from the point where we had parked our car, involved going down a street which ran down to the river Rhine, and on the other side of the river were German troops. The street offered a perfect view to the troops across the river. We were rather nervous, but hugged the near walls of the houses, and nothing happened. We turned into a side street at the earliest opportunity. This was not the idle sightseeing excursion that it may sound to have been. One of the professors at the university had been engaged in nuclear research, and some of the papers that had previously been gathered suggested him as a worthwhile target. But we did not find him. And I do not know whether the papers that we gathered in our expedition proved worthwhile. This was one of many such trips which occasionally turned up extremely valuable material. In the course of one of these trips, close to the Rhine bank, I saw a puff of yellow-brown smoke suddenly blossom in the sky above the far bank. This was the only
German anti-aircraft fire that I saw. Indeed, the only anti-aircraft fire that I saw during my many months. I walked down the street en route to the German, to the university physics institute. It was the only time that I was actually aware of being exposed to enemy fire, and I confess that I was extremely nervous and hugged the wall of the house, of the houses, the walls of the houses, very tightly, trying to be as fat and thin as possible. To be as thin as possible. And urging the two or three GIs with me to follow my example, which they did. From time to time, it was necessary to visit some headquarters to find out how the war was progressing. In other words, to find out where we could go to and what route we could follow to dig up the information that we were seeking. I believe it was a Corps headquarters at Krefeld, a large industrial city in the Rhine area, where we, I particularly remember a large map on the wall covered with a thin sheet of plastic on which the lines were marked in colored crayon. And these could be changed from day to day or left indefinitely until change was necessary. We always received cooperation and help whenever possible. In addition to Krefeld, we visited, among other cities, mentioned Gladbach, which was southwest of Krefeld. Krefeld itself being about 35 miles northeast of Aachen. We also visited Bonn, which was up the Rhine, some slight distance from Cologne. I do not remember any great accomplishments in any of these places, which were, in the case of Krefeld and Mönchengladbach, heavily industrialized. Alan Bates, my roommate at Arshin, was a metallurgist and interested, naturally, in the great steel plants in the Rhine district. I accompanied him to one great steel mill very close to the Rhine bank. It had been completely shut down, and was totally empty. A vast iron shed, I recall, in which we wandered looking at what had been left, which was a good deal. Firing was going on at the time, and the discharges, the continuous pounding of a heavy machine gun reverberated and echoed back and forth in the empty, huge empty shed of the steel mill. Heavier artillery was firing also from behind us, firing over, throwing shells over our heads at the Germans' troops just across the Rhine. It was a particularly eerie feeling in a cutout particularly. It was an eerie feeling, particularly in the great empty shed of the steel mill with all its echo. Two cities territory between Aachen and Cologne had seen very heavy fighting a few weeks previously. Two cities, Düren and Jülich, J-U-L-I-C-H, had been virtually leveled by artillery fire and bombing. We drove past one or the other of these cities on many of our trips to the Rhine. One of them still had part of its ancient walls standing, and a tower marked, a small tower still stood at one of the gates. On the walls were inscribed the words, "You are entering this city courtesy of the 301st Artillery Regiment." in parentheses, I am not sure that this was the right regiment, but it was some similar name. Nearby was an earlier inscription, Die Juden sind unerwünscht. Jews are not wanted. In the awful desolation of one of these cities, a very small park dividing a street showed not only fresh green, but a few roses in bloom. This was hard to believe, as it was late March or early April in a pretty cold, in pretty cold weather. Flames were flickering in some of the ruins nearby, and one wonders if if heat from the burning city had brought out the green and the blossoms. It was not unusual when entering a city that had been bombed severely to find an inscription on a conspicuous wall welcoming the visitor in the name of the military unit which had passed that way. The most frequent inscription found on walls, however, was the information that, quote, Kilroy was here. From the location of these inscriptions, one was tempted to conclude that Kilroy suffered severely from dysentery. The jeep in which we traveled was normally equipped with a machine gun mount, but no machine gun. The military personnel were all equipped with carbines or pistols or both, but the civilian scientists carried no weapons, because if captured, they could have been legally shot if caught with weapons, instead of being shot illegally by Nazi SS men. However, no Alsace personnel were captured or even wounded, although a few had close calls. The Alsace scientists carried
identity cards showing a so-called assimilated rank. Entitling them to treatment as military officers.